Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Melissa and the Vicar by S.M. LaViolette. Narrated by Ella Lynch. Chapter 1. New Bickford, England. Melissa Griffin stared into red eyes that burned with malevolence. Her breath froze in her chest, but her heart made up for her lungs' mutiny by thundering in her ears. She took a minute step back, but her tormentor strode inexorably closer. She shuffled to the side, but he followed her sideways too. "What do you want from me?" She forced the words through gritted teeth. The foul, evil beast said nothing, stalking ever closer. There were only two choices. She could run, or she could fight, and there was no chance she would vanquish such an implacable foe. Mel silently counted to three, grabbed two fistfuls of her skirts, and broke into a run while screaming, "Help!" She flew past a tiny daub and wattle cottage that looked like it should have housed angels instead of this nasty brute. Something struck the back of one leg, and Mel risked a glimpse at her pursuer. He was right behind her, dogged and menacing and... oof! Melissa slammed into a wall that was hard and warm and... human. The human wall grunted. "Here, then. Don't be afraid," a deep voice soothed. Mel was blind to everything except the red eyes and razor-sharp claws behind her and ploughed through the thicket of limbs, climbing the stranger's body as if he were a tree. Strong arms slid around her, lifted her, and spun her around before depositing her on the ground, his body a shield, a substantial one at that, between Melissa and that fiend. "Hector." Her protector's deep voice was overlaid with a tone of command that demanded to be obeyed. When only silence met his order, Mel stood on her toes and peeked over broad black-clad shoulders, pale blonde hair tickling her nose. Her jaw dropped at what she saw. The demon had screeched to a halt and was ambling away in the opposite direction, behaving as if butter wouldn't melt in his mouth. Beak. "Why, that...
"Rooster,"
the same deep voice said, this time laced with amusement rather than command. Mel realized she'd pasted the front of her body to the back of his and took a hasty step back. He turned, and she blinked. It might have been the conceit of a city dweller, but she'd not expected to see a man as lovely as her saviour in the middle of a country lane. In fact, Melissa could not recall seeing a man as beautiful, yes, beautiful, as this one, ever. And he was wearing a clerical collar. "I've been rescued from that hellion by a vicar." Rather than be insulted by her disbelieving tone, he smiled. A warm, charming, gorgeous smile that should not have belonged to a man of the cloth. Not that she knew anything whatsoever about vicars and what type of smiles they should or did have. Men of the cloth tended to be thin on the ground in her line of business. For all she knew, all clergymen were this attractive. Perhaps it was a prerequisite of the job. Was that how they filled their pews on Sunday?
"I'm afraid I don't have the honour of being a vicar, yet. So things are even worse, you see. You've actually been rescued by a mere curate."
He executed a graceful bow.
"Mr. Stanwyck, at your service, miss."
Melissa pulled her gaze away from his mouth, which definitely was wasted on a vicar, and said, Griffin.
"A pleasure, Miss Griffin."
His eyes were the clear, guileless blue of the sky, and they met her own, rather than roaming her body. Mel's inner critic, as vociferous and relentless as a Greek choir, pointed out that not every man in Great Britain wished to lay themselves out at her feet, even if it had seemed that way since she'd been 14.
"I know everyone in New Bickford, So you must be a visitor, Miss Griffin.
Yes, I've come to the country to convalesce.
His brow furrowed, and his expression shifted to one of genuine sympathy.
I am sorry to hear you've been ill.
He wasn't just mouthing a platitude. He actually sounded sorry. I am on the mend now, just...
Mr. Stanwyck! Yoo-hoo!
The voice floated toward them from the direction of the quaint little cottage, which the vile Hector apparently called home. Right now, said villain was placidly scratching among his hen harem, pausing a moment here and there to execute what must have been some type of hen-attracting sidestep shuffle, his chest puffed out. Melissa glared at him. How dare he look so harmless? The curate greeted the approaching woman.
Hello, Miss Philpot, and how are you this afternoon?
The woman in question was a tall, gangly female, easily twice the curate's age, who was sporting a coquettish smile and the eyelash-batting airs of a schoolroom miss.
Oh, Mr. Stanwyck, Gloria will be so relieved you are here.
Her bulbous green orbs swiveled toward Melissa, and her steel-grey eyebrows dropped like twin guillotines.
And you've brought your sister?
The last word was spoken in such a hopeful tone that Melissa had to bite her lip to keep from laughing. The curate pressed his two beautiful lips together in a mild smile that was belied by the twinkle in his eyes.
I'm afraid my parents did not see fit to bless me with any sisters, ma'am, only brothers.
Miss Philpot was nothing if not adaptable. She turned from Mel, her expression softening as she gazed at the curate.
Well, that is certainly the Lord's work, if they are all as handsome and sweet-natured as you, Mr. Stanwyck.
The curate accepted the compliment with a smile and gestured to Melissa.
This is Miss Griffin. I'm afraid she just had a... Well, I don't suppose you would call it a run-in, so much as a run-away with Hector.
Mel narrowed her eyes at his witticism and was rewarded by one of his stunning smiles. Miss Philpot wagged an admonishing finger at the vicious animal.
Oh, Hector, have you been over-vigilant?
She spoke in a tolerant, cooing tone that sent Hector into another of his sideways step slides. Miss Philpot tittered appreciatively at the manoeuvre. It seemed the bird's debatable charms worked on more than just his hens. Maybe Hector was smarter than he looked. Miss Philpot turned to Mel.
I do apologise for Hector's enthusiasm, Miss... Griffin.
The affection in her eyes, a residual product of Hector's charm, slid away to reveal a zealous gleam that would have done a Spanish inquisitor proud.
Are you just visiting our village on your way to... somewhere else?
Miss Philpot wasn't the only one waiting for her response with interest. The cerulean blue eyes of the curate were also turned her way. Something about his clear gaze made Mel shy and fidgety, a feeling she'd not had since selling oranges on street corners when she was a girl. She brushed off the skirt of her walking costume, as though Hector might have been pelting her with rotted fruits and vegetables, rather than just his... She paused to eye the rooster, and was forced to admit, very scrawny body.
I am staying in a house down the way.
She gestured with the hand that wasn't clutching her reticule, and then realised she'd motioned in the direction of the ocean. Both members of her small audience wore slight frowns of confusion. Melissa bestowed her most winning smile on Miss Philpot, curious to see if it had any effect on the woman. It did not.
I'm sorry, I'm afraid I'm a bit turned around.
She pointed toward the path she'd just sprinted down a few moments earlier.
I am staying at Haliburton Manor.
Miss Philpot's eyes widened.
Haliburton Manor?
Yes, that is correct. Why was the woman looking at her that way?
Ah, I see. How unusual that we heard nothing about it.
Mel wondered if she was supposed to place an announcement in the local newspaper or contact the town crier. I expect that is because I dealt with an agent in London and brought all my own servants. Ah, and you are staying there, alone?
Melissa suppressed a twinge of annoyance at the prying questions. This was the sort of curiosity she should have expected when coming to such a small village.
Mr. Stanwyck! A voice trilled from the direction of the cottage. How delightful to see you! But Agnes, why are you keeping the Reverend standing out? Oh, the newcomer said when she noticed Melissa. I'm so sorry, I didn't see you there. Gloria, this is the new tenant in Haliburton Manor. Miss Griffin, my sister, Miss Gloria Philpott.
Mel would have known, without being told, this was Miss Philpott's sister, since the two women were mirror images of each other.
Haliburton Manor!
Miss Gloria aimed a curious expression Melissa's way. Just what was it about her choice of residence that was so interesting? Miss Gloria opened her mouth, no doubt to take over the Inquisition, but the curate took charge of the conversation.
You must be walking to town, Miss Griffin. Perhaps I might show you the way.
Mel thought he looked hopeful. The Mrs. Philpott, on the other hand, looked forlorn.
But, Mr. Stanwyck, didn't you just come from town? Won't you come in for some tea?
The elder Miss Philpott stared accusingly at Melissa while she spoke, as if Mel were some sort of siren leading the curate toward jagged rocks.
And I thought you were going to look at our wisteria trellis, the bit that needs mending, Miss Gloria added when the curate didn't jump on the offer of tea.
Mel couldn't help herself.
Yes, Mr. Stanwyck, I should hate to deprive you of tea and the trellis.
A muscle at the corner of his shapely mouth twitched.
I'll just walk Miss Griffin into the village and show her the church along the way and be back in half a jiffy. Not to worry. I shall see to the trellis before the day is out.
His hand was at her elbow, and he'd managed to turn them both and start down the path without Mel even realizing it.
Goodbye, ladies. It was a pleasure to meet you,
she tossed over her shoulder at the frowning women. She turned to the Reverend, who was walking briskly, as if to put some distance between himself and the two disappointed members of his flock.
A half a jiffy, Mr. Stanwyck. I don't believe I've heard that particular expression before.
He chuckled, his hand falling away from her arm.
Why do I feel that you enjoy a bit of mischief-making, Miss Griffin?
I certainly don't run away from mischief. Not like I run from nasty little feathered-beaked goblins.
He made a tisking sound.
I can see you're going to hold that slip of the tongue against me, aren't you?
Perhaps.
He cut her a look of mock severity.
To err is human, but to forgive is divine, Miss Griffin.
I'm afraid I'm far more familiar with erring, Mr. Stanwyck.
He had no idea just how true that was.
I see. Well, I must warn you that Hector is something of a favourite in these parts. It would cast a shadow over your reputation to be heard bandying about such opprobrium regarding his character or, stature.
Mel laughed.
Well, I wouldn't want to have a shadowy reputation.
Indeed.
He grinned down at her, looking like the least probable example of a clergyman in all of Britain.
Now, I'm afraid we departed before Miss Philpott could winkle out all your pertinent details.
Winkle away, Reverend.
When did you arrive at Haliburton Manor, Miss Griffin?
Just yesterday.
Ah, that explains why neither of the Misses Philpott knew of your arrival. They are early to bed, with the chickens, as it were.
Mel cast him a sideways look, and then wished she hadn't. With his striking white blonde hair, huge blue eyes, fringed with dark rather than blonde lashes, of course, and classical features, he really was a gorgeous specimen of manhood, and that was an area which she could claim expertise. Although he resembled an angel,
he was as solidly muscled as a bull beneath his loose-fitting suit. She knew that from having his arms tight around her. The fact that he was dressed in the sober attire of a clergyman somehow made his fair good looks even more appealing. Or perhaps that was just the novelty of him. While Melissa was more knowledgeable about men than she cared to be, she'd rarely associated with the wholesome type, and she'd never spoken to a member of the clergy, at least not that she was aware of. Something about walking beside him made her feel anxious. Most likely, it was just that he did not fit neatly into any of her categories of men. Or perhaps it was because she thought God might strike her down at any moment for having the audacity to associate with one of his chosen ones.
"Have a care, Miss Griffin."
A strong, steadying hand reappeared at her elbow, and he steered her around a prominent tree root in the path. "Thank you." She'd do better to pay more attention to where she was going, and less to inventorying the man beside her.
"Do you have an appointment in town, or can you take a moment to come and see our fine church windows?" he asked, after they'd walked a moment in silence.
She had nothing but time. But did she really want to go inside a church? After all, it hadn't been her intention to actually attend services or even interact with any of the villagers. That had been the point of leasing a house outside of town.
"Our windows are considered some of the finest in this part of England," he added,
the humour in his voice making her risk another glance. Lord, his eyes were sparkling at her. Were curates supposed to sparkle? Surely not. "Well, I can't say no to that, can I?" Mel asked, her tone tarter than she'd intended. "But I cannot stay long, because I'm to meet up with my aunt."
"I'll show you only the high points, and that way deliver you to your aunt in good time."
"Oh, you needn't deliver me to her. I'll be..."
"I can introduce you to the vicar, Mr. Healy, if he is about."
"No, really, you needn't go out of your way." Lord, the last thing she needed was to meet more clergy. It would be a miracle if she didn't turn to a pillar of salt, or smoke, or stone, or suffer some sort of divine punishment. Not that she'd ever actually read any of the Bible, or had any idea of what type of punishment was meted out between its covers.
"It would be my pleasure," he said, interrupting her muddled thoughts.
But not before she realised that she wanted to see his windows and be delivered to the village by him. When was the last time a man had cared enough about her safety to deliver her anywhere? Well, a man other than her dear friend Joss, of course. Perhaps it might be nice to receive such care. That realisation only served to annoy her. She had most certainly not come to the country to engage in casual flirtation, especially not with a bloody vicar. "Is giving every visitor to New Bickford a personal tour part of your strenuous curate's duties?"
"Oh, yes. I'm responsible for any number of things. Taking tea with parishioners, mending trellises, showing off church windows, rescuing damsels in distress from feathered predators. Ah, here we are. To the left, if you would, Miss Griffin."
He gestured toward an ornate gate set in an old stone wall.
"This is the back way into the churchyard now, but it used to be the original lych gate."
He lifted the heavy horseshoe-shaped latch and pushed open the gate.
"It is a rare example of the Gothic style."
He waited until she'd gone through and closed it behind her.
"Back in those days, they called this a resurrection gate."
Melissa noticed they'd stepped into a graveyard filled with worn, tilted headstones. "Why is this gate no longer used?" she frowned. "Actually, just what is a lych gate for?" He gestured to the heavy beams topping the gate.
"It was a place to shelter the coffin before burial, hence the gate's unusual substance. The path we just came down is what people used to call a corpse road."
Mel shivered.
"Are you chilled, Miss Griffin?"
He wore a look of concern, but she saw the humour lurking in his eyes. "No, that was merely a case of the shivers,
which is exactly what you expected after telling me such a gruesome piece of information. She raised an eyebrow at him. Confess it, Mr. Stanwyck. You wanted to give me the shivers.
He laughed, his even white teeth adding to his list of perfections. You'll have to forgive me. I have so few amusements.
Somehow, Mel doubted that.
It's at this point in my tour where I point out our magnificent spire.
He leaned low and close, as if to view something from her height and perspective, and then held out his arm and pointed.
Can you see just the tip of it, above that big chestnut tree?
Melissa was conscious of the heat of his body and his clean, masculine scent. She ignored her body's unwanted twinge of interest and followed the direction of his pointing finger to where a foot of grey stone was visible above the tree canopy. The church and the gate were built together, she asked, aware of the pulse beating at the base of her throat, and glad when he stood and put some distance between their bodies.
You have an excellent eye for architecture, Miss Griffin.
Now you are guilty of flattery, Mr. Stanwyck. He gave the same warm chuckle as before, and Melissa decided eliciting such a velvety laugh could prove an enjoyable pastime. Before she could give that alarming thought the scrutiny it deserved, another man dressed in the clothing of a clergyman came toward them.
Ah, Mr. Stanwyck, good morning.
I was hoping our paths would cross, Vicar. Mr. Healy, may I introduce Miss Griffin? She is new to our area and has just taken up residence at Haliburton Manor.
The vicar, a bone-thin man who looked to be in his late 60s or early 70s, stiffened at something his curate said, his reaction not dissimilar to the Philpotts. But he recovered quickly and turned his deep-set grey eyes on her. His mouth curved into a warm smile.
Welcome to New Bickford, Miss Griffin. I am very glad to hear that Haliburton Manor has a tenant again.
Thank you, Mr. Healy.
I encountered Miss Griffin not far from the Philpott cottage. She was, finding it difficult to pass.
The vicar chuckled.
Ah, Hector, was it?
He nodded at his own question, not appearing to need an answer.
He is a fierce protector who is cast in the mould of the ancients. A most excellent rooster.
The curate gave her a look that said,
See, I told you so.
Mel's lips parted.
Indeed, you speak the truth, Vicar.
Mr. Stanwyck interjected when Melissa couldn't quite find the words she was looking for to express her thoughts on Hector. He cut her a sideways glance and rocked back on his heels.
Hector is one of the Titans.
And how long will you stay with us, Miss Griffin? The vicar asked,
pulling her away from the narrow-eyed look she was giving the teasing curate. It was time to share the story she'd concocted. Until the end of the summer. She cleared her throat. I was ill last winter, and have come to the country with my aunt to partake of the country air.
Ah, I see. You are from the city?
Yes, we are both from London.
Well, the vicar said,
his tone brisk as he rubbed his hands together, as if he'd just completed a task and was brushing away the remnants.
I know I'm biased, but I believe there is no town in Great Britain better than ours for peace and healing. We are a close community, but also one which respects the privacy of our members.
Melissa hoped he was correct, because anyone who pried too deeply into her story would find something they wouldn't care to discover.
Well, I shall leave you and Mr. Stanwyck to continue your tour. It was a pleasure, Miss Griffin, and I shall see you on Sunday.
Melissa made some non-committal sound, waiting until the vicar was out of earshot before turning to the curate. I can't help but think people are surprised to hear I'm staying at Haliburton Manor. His cheekbones, high, sharp and beautiful, looked even more appealing with a faint red stain.
I'm afraid the last inhabitant, she met a rather tragic end.
Mel dipped her chin when he stopped.
Yes? She was a widow. Her husband was...
He grimaced.
Well, he was killed in a military engagement in India. Mrs. Symes took her own life.
It was a sad story, of course, but she still didn't see...
Mrs. Symes had not seen her husband for 11 months.
He hesitated and said,
"She was with child when she died."
Ah, now she understood the odd looks, and the reason for them made her fume.
I see, a tragedy and a scandal.
She cut him an arch look that was not playful.
Or do the good and proper villagers even see it as a tragedy?
He blinked in surprise.
Death is always a tragedy, Miss Griffin.
It was an answer, but not one to the question she had asked. He leaned toward her, his blue eyes shadowed with concern.
You look flushed. I believe I've tired you out, dragging you about.
She swallowed her irritation at the story he'd told. She'd known something was going on when the two older women, the Philpotts, had assumed that faint, virtuous air. Melissa had been the recipient of that look more times than she could count.
Take hold of yourself, Mel.
Yes, she'd better. After all, she'd known a small community often meant small-mindedness. But she'd come here anyway.
You came here to rest and make some important decisions, not to battle rural prejudice.
She forced herself to smile.
Thank you for your concern, but I'm fine. I am, however, going to be late, so perhaps I'd better be on my way. Maybe you can show me the church some other day.
Though not if she had any say about it.
No.
The story he'd just told her made it painfully clear she didn't need to make friends here. In fact, that was a terrible idea. And making friends with a man of the cloth, especially this handsome, kind and curious curate, well, that was the worst thing she could do. For both of them.
Chapter 2
Magnus's clerical collar felt oddly stiff and scratched his neck as he watched Miss Griffin walk away down New Bickford's narrow main street. Its only street, really, with her aunt, Mrs. Daisy Trent. Mrs. Trent had been waiting for her niece at New Bickford's tiny inn, the Sleeping Ferret, enjoying a pot of tea in their private parlour. And what an aunt Mrs. Trent was! Certainly nothing like any of Magnus's numerous aunts, none of whom were tall, buxom and bold-eyed. He also suspected Mrs. Trent was wearing cosmetics, although he wasn't familiar enough with such things to be certain. The two women looked nothing alike. Miss Griffin was a delicate, pale, almost ethereally beautiful, auburn-haired goddess who appeared too fragile for this world. Her aunt, on the other hand, epitomised earthiness. Not just her lush body, but her full, smiling lips and the knowing glint in her eyes. Magnus had felt as if she were inspecting his person and stripping away his clothing in the process. It was a strange feeling, and he'd no doubt imagined it. After the women had taken their leave from Magnus, they disappeared into Cooper's Mercantile together. It hadn't been his plan to linger outside the shop and spy on the two newest members of New Bickford through the diamond-paned windows, but neither was he in a hurry to get away. Magnus was reliving his brief conversation with the delectable Miss Griffin when a voice behind him pulled him out of his pleasant musing.
"Mr. Stanwyck, a word, please."
He turned to find Mrs. Pilkington and her three daughters approaching him, and bit back a groan.
"Ah, good afternoon, ma'am."
If you asked anyone who knew Magnus, even a little bit, whether he was arrogant, proud or conceited, they would have thrown back their head and laughed. It was true. He wasn't proud about his physical appearance, which he viewed as a product of two attractive parents, rather than any efforts on his part. He'd never aspired to be a pink of the ton, and his clothing, even before he'd entered the clergy, had always been functional and comfortable, rather than stylish.
His only real contribution to his outward appearance was to keep his body healthy and fit, which happily was an unexpected byproduct of being...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?